would say is okay.
Let's go ahead and call the September 3rd meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order. And as always, we will begin with the...
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Mayor Pruitt.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw.
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari.
Here.
Councilmember Todd.
Here.
Councilmember Vaughn.
Here.
Councilmember Steckler.
Here.
Councilmember Vignell.
Here.
First up is audience communication, and we have a number of people, guests in the audience. Stephanie, would you like to introduce them?
Yes, I would like to start off this evening. We have Liam from Cedarwood Robotics Competition. They have their group here wanting to speak with us for just a moment at the beginning of the meeting. Liam, you want to come up?
Hello, we are the Cedarwood Elementary Robotics Team, and we are looking at the Mill Creek Library for our robotics competition, and we are looking to add an aspect to it. The competition has a research element to it, and we were hoping you would put us on your agenda. We were thinking of using the vacant space on the other side of the library from the entrance to expand the library. And if you did do this, we were thinking of adding earthquake resistance and maybe to build it out of recycled materials, etc. And we would like to ask you some questions on the next possible opportunity. Thank you for your time, and thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks, Liam.
Can you meet with them and set it up? And we're going to need a contact number. I got your name, but I don't have a phone number or anything. So you can see that the city manager gets it. Thank you. Next up, John.
John Raymer, 831 148th Street, Southeast here in Mill Creek. Just like to bring to the council's attention that the USS Ralph Johnson is currently deployed. They will be back by 15th of September, and the captain and XO have been spoken to extensively about having a barbecue, and they say they will move the ship and heaven and earth as much as necessary to make it happen. I also have commitments for funding from a couple of organizations like AMVETS and some extra cooks. All we need now is for the city to say, yes, we're in, and we can coordinate a date with the captain and crew and throw a nice salmon barbecue for them. And so now I will pass it on to you kind folks to take the ball from that.
Michael, can you get this coordinated also?
Yes.
Thanks, Michael. Michael and I have been talking about it already. So.
Yeah. So you can report back on scheduling for us?
We will, ma'am.
I assume everybody is on board?
Yes.
Got it. And one more thing about the Johnson. The current captain has received orders, so he will be going to a new assignment in November. There will be a change of command ceremony for the new captain coming on board. And typically, an adopted city, the captain will invite you all to come to the change of command ceremony. So it'll probably be the first week of November. I'll let you know as soon as I find out about it. But in case you haven't been to one of them before, they're really neat events. It's on board the ship, and a lot of pomp and circumstance and passing of flags and all that kind of stuff. So sometime in the beginning of November, please say yes when you get an invitation to come to the change of command ceremony. Thank you.
Hey, Mayor, can I just ask, John, can I ask you a quick question? So I know we talked about hosting some of the sailors on the Ralph Johnson for Thanksgiving. Have we started that process where a sign-up sheet or they're aware, we're aware,
Yes, the captain, the XO, and their CMC, their chief enlisted person, they're compiling a list. They have people coming and going off the ship right now. It's PCS, permanent change of station season. And as soon as they have a complete list, they will ask me to come on board, and then we'll start matching names. And then we'll start asking for families and members of the community to come forward and volunteer to accept a sailor to take home. So, yes, we've started that.
Thank you so much.
Sure enough.
Okay, audience communication. Anybody else want to talk to the council tonight? Once? Twice? Okay, we'll have another opportunity at the end of the meeting. So first up on new business is appointments to the Design Review Board. Mike, would you chair that? Brian?
I did. Thank you, Mayor. We have two positions on the Design Board that expire this year. We had two applicants. They were the incumbents, Tina Hastings and Dave Hambleton, and Councilmember Todd and I conducted the interviews with the assistance of Design Review Board Chair Dave Gunter, and we are making a motion to reappoint Tina Hastings and Dave Hambleton to the Design Review Board.
Second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Both been doing a great job, and that board has done a lot of good work. We talked to them about a couple of ideas that will also probably come back and bring to staff, but some ideas about how the board itself could probably help do some, what do you call them, post-project review kind of inputs back into the process. They said the process works pretty well, but we said it's been a number of years, apparently since Town Center, that the Design Review Board has really gone through point by point and said, how are these standards working for us? There are things that would work better for our development partners and things like that. So when they get a lull in their schedule, they were excited about kind of going and tweaking and same continuing to move on the process. So I think it's an opportunity for staff to work with them on that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Next up is our successor interlocal agreement with the Everett Public Schools for the purpose of sharing costs with the Mill Creek Police Department School Resource Officer Program. City Manager?
Thank you, Mayor, members of council. We actually had an agreement drafted for one school resource officer until a meeting last week with Dr. Saltzman, the new superintendent of the Everett Public Schools. I'm informed, these are unverified numbers, but our current agreement roughly allocated 70% expenses to the school, 30% of the expenses to the city, intended to mimic the allocation between school being in session and not in session for the school resource officer. As a result of last week's meeting, it was last Thursday's meeting, Dr. Saltzman and his team have made us an offer that we believe would result in a second school resource officer for roughly the exact same cost and obligation that the city is currently paying. Namely, it would be roughly an allocation of 85% to the schools and 15% for the officers, which would result in the numbers roughly staying the same, excepting the dollars for inflation and other cost increases. So that's the introduction. Our goal is to have a new contract drafted. We're already working on it. Mr. Marsal has taken a look at it. Chief Elwin has. I've taken a quick look at it. It looks like we're going to be on track to present the contract, but we still wanted to introduce this concept to you nonetheless this week because we're looking to get an additional presence in the middle school this week with council's approval. Chief?
Thank you, Michael. Not much more really to add to that. A little history. We've had a school resource officer program since 1996, in partnership with Everett Public Schools.
Chief, you may need to use the microphone. Mic for the audio. I'm sorry.
I'm afraid of the microphone. So we've had this program since 1996. We've worked the last couple of years with the school district to try and expand our capabilities with the program as the enrollment at both Jackson and Heatherwood have increased dramatically over the years. Jackson, for example, was built for 1,600 kids. There's now about 2,300 getting ready to start school tomorrow. We have an SRO in place. Officer Josh Saga was selected to be an SRO last year. He's continuing those duties for the next 2 or 3 years, so he's getting ready to go back to school tomorrow as well. The conversations came to kind of a decision point last Thursday, and it looks like we'll be able to proceed with the second officer for as Michael mentioned, about roughly the same cost that we've been for one. Really can't pass that up. So we have sent that agreement to our attorney to review. The school district is preparing that to present to the school board at their September 10th meeting as well. So we're hoping to bring that, well, not hoping, we will bring that to you next Tuesday in 1 week and ask you to authorize the city manager to execute that ILA. We'll start the process of recruiting a second SRO right away. We have contractual obligations with the police union, so we have to post the announcement for a certain period of time and have an interview and selection process in conjunction with the school district staff. They want to be part of that process, and we want them to be. And then once we figure that out, our goal is to get that school officer to Heatherwood by about the first week or so of October, and he'll be late for school. Hopefully they'll understand and excuse him, and then get that program going, and then that will be followed by a recruitment to hire a police officer, because now we'll need to replace an officer in our patrol division to backfill for that. So that'll be a process, and as we all know, hiring right now, everybody has a job, so nobody's looking for a job. We'll see how that goes, but we'll make it as quick as we can. And I think I'll just open it up for any questions.
I think this is great. The only question I had is, if I recall correctly, and I think it was right before we did the budget last fall, I think Dr. Cohn met with a bunch of us to talk about this very issue, but they were proposing at that time that we carry the freight for the second position. So I'm glad to see they've changed. Do we know what changed? Why?
Doctors, I imagine. Dr. Cohn retired and Dr. Saltzman has arrived. So I imagine with the change in leadership at the school district, they've had those discussions internally and perhaps changed their position. I can't say. Just
not that it matters. What's on the table is great, and I think it's something we should worthwhile doing.
Thank you.
85% for both. 85% for both officers.
Yes, it's for two police officers, and you know the 85% is kind of a rough estimate of what the costs are. So we use 85% because that's what it boils down to, but the ILA is a specific dollar amount. The ILA does not reflect a percentage. But when you do the math, the number in the ILA is 85% of an officer's salary and benefits.
So it's 85% for both officers?
Yes.
And through the chair? Mayor, additionally, the RCW really does prevent us from either giving more than the benefit that inures to the city and the school district respectively. So one of the things that we're going to be working on is ensuring that there are check-in points, not only with regard to performance, but also with regard to the accounting, so that if there's a shortage for special events coverage, we can at least make that up in the next period to ensure that the both entities, the school district and the city, are in compliance with that provision.
And part of the reason that we changed the percentage or changed the dollar amount is we've done a better job in the last couple of years with tracking the workload associated with the school resource officer. And also there's just been a couple of things that have occurred the last couple of years. Our SRO is working school events during the summer break. There are a couple of camps that the SRO works in conjunction with the school district and youth groups. There's a law enforcement leadership camp that the SRO instructs at, and a baseball tournament, and a couple of other summertime activities. So when we look at those and how they're directly related to the SRO program, because all these kids that are at these events are the same kids that are at the schools and through the school districts, and so we're really keeping our SRO busy for more than just 180 days of school each year. We're tasking them with quite a bit, and that's representative of why we are changing the number this time. And this new agreement will be a three-year agreement, and it's got a 3% escalator built into it for the subsequent 2 years.
Thank you, Mayor. I like it. Served as a school resource officer in my time with Mill Creek, and then I've also served as a school resource officer while working for the sheriff's office. And when it's done right, you get a pretty good return on your money. problems are solved more efficiently, and it's a good program with a lot to offer besides being a shield between some horrific event that may or may not ever come, but we do have to plan for them. But then on a day-to-day level, there's a lot of return quality of life-wise, and it reduces the workload for your patrol guys because the SRO is handling these things more efficiently and not having some kid go home and tell mom, I got my iPhone was stolen, and now it's a report, and so it's great. And I'm really glad. I wasn't completely on board with the idea of us footing the bill for the middle school. I saw the benefit, I just wasn't sure, but with the school district making the offer that they're making, it sounds great to me. This is just one of seven, so I need some other people to be on board with this, but I personally would like to schedule a few hours soon to discuss staffing and not just necessarily knee-jerk, we move this person over, we're going to go hire another person, but take a deep dive look at where we're at, what our goals are. Are we meeting those goals? Do we need to hire two more people? Or is the current level good? So that's just me, but if there's some concurrence over here, I would like to have that discussion.
I think the city manager has that as part of our budget amendment process.
Okay.
With this agreement,
it sounded like we were going right out to replace and hire a new body, so I was just...
Well, we do have a certain obligation to make that effort as soon as possible. As Mike mentioned, there's an RCW that really forbids one governmental entity from financially benefiting from an agreement from another government entity. So we do have some obligation to fill the position that the school district is paying for. So
I'd like to get a legal opinion on that.
Sure.
I think there's some discussion on whether we're getting a benefit through this partnership.
I have a question.
I'm sorry. We have two council members.
Oh, sorry.
Councilmember Cavallari, then Ty.
Thanks, Mayor. I also like this. I think, for the most part, all of us have been very supportive of doing the SRO program. As Councilmember Holzclaw said a moment ago, the issue was money, and we did spend a lot of time discussing this and meeting with folks, and a city our size just simply could not pick up the lion's share of the costs, and essentially taking two officers off patrol and reassigning them to the schools. So the fact that the school district is, whether it's a change in leadership, whatever got us to this point, I'm very happy that we're doing it now. A little bothered that it's a week before school starts, but still, however we get there is always a bonus. So. Good job. Thank you.
Management by crisis. That's kind of how it goes sometimes. So.
Hey, Councilmember Todd Binstead.
Thanks. I think this is a good idea overall. I also wish we could have planned for this, and so you would have had somebody in the queue. Because my concern is now the school is going to be fully staffed. Jackson, tomorrow. Heatherwood, hopefully on October 1st, if you can get somebody into this spot. And I think this school district won't start paying for him until October. They shouldn't. He or she, the new
Correct.
SRO. But we're going to be left with a hole in our city, and so that kind of goes back to what Councilmember Bond is talking about. And I don't know where we are. A number of years ago, those who have been on council for a long time, longer time, we got way down in the weeds with staffing, but I felt like we went through a period where we were concerned about how many resources you, the police department, had and how we staffed those, because it was so difficult to fill those a couple of years ago. We were down to, even though we were always trying to hire people, we were always short. I'm concerned that we're going to put ourselves short for how long it takes to find somebody, how long it takes to train them, how long they go through field training when they're really an officer again. We're going to take somebody who is a fully capable resource, and it's going to be great they're at the school, fully capable, but we're going to be short in the rest of the community. And so I'm concerned about that impact on everybody else's safety. Hopefully there's not an impact. And maybe you guys are in good enough shape that that's not a problem, but I'd like to hear more about that. We don't have to hear about it tonight, or maybe that's part of your strategic planning process. It may be what's alluded to by Councilmember Bond is just give us some assurances that we've got the structure you've got and how it's working is going to give us the kind of community response we need as well. Thanks.
Sure. Operationally, we can accommodate this. It will be a financial impact to our overtime budget. We'll take one person off of a patrol squad that will have five people, take that down to four, and the Police Guild contract, the way it's written, allows for leave for folks. And so we can run into instances where we'll have additional overtime costs associated with this once we pull somebody off that squad. The good thing is, once our officer starts in the school district will be paying the city, and so we'll have vacancy money that we can use to offset those overtime costs. So once that school district money starts coming in, we until we hire somebody to backfill, we'll have at least a little bit of a cushion to help offset the overtime budget, which it will be a hit. There's just no two ways about it. You take a squad from 5 to 4, and you always want to have 3 working, and 2 can be gone because the contract says so. The math, you know, it's going to be an impact, but we can accommodate it.
My question was, you have an officer now in the school. We're going to hire a second officer, but the compensation that the school is paying is significantly higher. You must have looked at this. Forget the overtime for just a minute, because that's kind of a stopgap to get mm-hmm. somebody hired. What is the impact to your staffing budget by bringing in this extra officer due to the fact that the school is paying a higher percentage? What's the ultimate end result? Are you how much?
Really, it's a net zero.
Okay, so it's a wash.
It is a wash, right.
My question. So
we were paying the city 30% for one officer.
Right.
Now we're paying 15% for two. And my simple math evens that out.
Okay.
And I consulted with a finance director, and she says, yes, that is correct. Your math is right. So.
Smart. Okay, good. So it's a wash.
It's a wash.
Okay.
Right. The operational is going to be the hit.
Bethany?
Thank you, Chief, for your presentation. I read through, and I'm also in favor of this, and I feel that we, as Mill Creek Police Force, do a great job with positive interactions and being proactive with the youth in our community. And I think this is an extension of that, because it helps foster the comfortable relationship in a friendly environment. So I am in favor of this as well, under the current conditions that you're bringing to us, if they are going to foot that much of the bill and it's not going to affect us negatively. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this opportunity, because it does exactly what you said. It gives us one more piece to have positive interaction with the kids in our community, but not just the kids, the staffs at the schools, and all of us who live here in town. It's another piece to really help our community be stronger, no doubt.
Okay, this is a study session item only, so anybody else have any comments or questions? So if you have any questions, please get them to Michael, and you'll have something back.
Yes, Mayor, we'll have a resolution as well as the contract for the council to review and vote.
Moving right along, Mill Creek Police Department strategic plan.
Thank you, Mayor. By way of a quick introduction, as Chief Allen has pointed out, this is a plan to make a plan. And we had originally discussed amongst our leadership team the idea that we would tuck it in as a report, council could read it, and when we came back with the plan, you could comment on it. Upon further reflection, Chief Allen and I have talked about presenting the plan to plan so that we make certain that where we're headed is already in the direction that the council intends. To the extent the police department budget is a sizable portion of the outlay annually for the city of Mill Creek, we thought this would be a good opportunity to begin a dialogue in terms of where we're going with the formulation of the long-term strategic plan. Chief?
Thank you, Michael. And this does kind of fit into Councilmember Bond's question about staffing. That is one of the pieces that will certainly be examined as we go through this strategic plan building process. So I'm just going to run through a few slides. There's information is included in your packet, and we'll answer any questions before, after, or during. Don't be afraid to interrupt me. But this is really the plan for a plan. And it's important that council be in the know, basically, on what we're doing with this, because we're going to be involving you. I'm going to ask several of you to participate and be part of this, but then also your constituents in the community, I'm going to ask them to be involved too. So I want to get everybody kind of on the same page. So this is a plan for a plan. I'll go through this slide a little bit about what a strategic plan is and why we need one. the background on how we got here, a little bit of an overview of the process and who will be involved, quick summary, and then kind of our next steps as we get into that. So what it is, it's a management activity, right, that helps set the priorities and focuses our energy and our efforts and our resources and our personnel to meet some goals from the community and strengthen our operations. It assures that everybody that's involved, community members and council members and the police department, we're all working towards the same goal. It gets establishes some agreement so we can all say, yes, that's what we want to do, right? Our community says that's what we were. We want to take our police department, and we all get on board with the same thing and are going down the same road. With the ability to assess as we go and adjust on the fly as necessary to stay current. And the plan will be reviewed every year, but that doesn't mean in the interim that we won't make adjustments based on what's going on. And it sets the direction and gives us an opportunity to set some goals and then some measurements for those goals when we get there. And why we need it? Well, we don't have one. And we need one. An organization needs to have some sort of strategic plan to set priorities. 5 years down the road, 6 years, 7 years down the road. We've done some strategic planning, but it's mostly just been items built into our biennial budget, you know, key outcomes and those kinds of things and goals. Relatively short term when you're talking about strategic planning. We've had a significant cultural shift in the police department in the last couple of years. We've done things differently than we've done them before. We've made some changes, and a lot of that was kind of on the fly or because it was necessary. Now we need to start thinking more strategically down the road. We've stabilized, and now we want to look to where we're going to be in 5 years and then beyond. And this is important in our department because our cops are the most visible ambassadors of all of us here. Everybody walking down the street wearing a uniform, the people know who they are, and they know they represent the government. And so we want to represent in the finest way possible and live what we have written on the side of our police cars at your service. Some background. You all remember, or many of you remember, some of you weren't here, the LEMAP from January 2016 was completed right before I got here and delivered to me, I think, on, I don't know, day two or three. Here you go, Chief, here's some light reading. But of that, was some bullet points in the LEMAP encouraging us to engage in this deliberate planning process, to include the community and the stakeholders, all the employees, that it be updated annually. And as we update it, we should replicate some of the work that went into it. When we come back, we're going to want to talk to some of the same stakeholder groups year to year to keep that thing updated. And ensure that we've got transparency and communication and so everybody knows what's going on and everybody's on the same page. And you should see here that that visioning should extend to city leadership, which be our leadership team, and then potentially elected officials. But I'm going to take the potentially out of that because, just so you know, I'm going to lean on you because I need your help on this one. The CPSM study that was delivered in October 2017 also included this as one of its major focuses. We need a more strategic focus. They understand that we were doing a lot of firefighting at the time. We were fixing things on the fly, but now we need to start looking forward. There were 17 major recommendations in the CPSM study. Two of them were directly related to this, basically saying you must do this if you're going to be really good at what you do, and that we need to work with internal and external stakeholders to develop this plan. And our own experience. Since I've been here, we have been just kind of fighting fires and fixing things on the way, but now we understand that our key outcomes and activities that we include in our budget process every couple of years was relatively short term. There are things that we want to get done with this budget or with this capital improvement plan, and we want to get them done now, but they have long-term implications, and so we need to think about those things, so we're thinking strategically. And then accreditation through WASPIC is one of our goals in the 19-20 biennium budget, and whether we get that done in 20 is still yet to be seen, but one thing that we do have to have as part of that process is a strategic plan. Now, WASPIC doesn't require the level and depth of this process that we're going to engage in here. We could write it down on a piece of paper and just update it every year and be good, but if we're going to do it, I want to do it right. And I can't back up. There we go. again, set that clear picture and know what our goals and strategies are and how we're going to get there, and then work with all of our stakeholders to get it done. And we know that that's important because we do that every day, but again, it's on a daily basis or a weekly basis. So kind of overview of the process, there will be a steering committee, and that'll be my part. I'll be kind of at the end of that, I'll be on that steering committee. I'll be the chair of that. The other folks on the steering committee will be the chairs of the three stakeholder groups, one city council member, which I'll ask you all to tell me who you would like to be on that steering committee. The caveat to that is that a council member may be on one of the stakeholder groups, and if you're a chair of the stakeholder group, then you can't be on the steering committee because we need to get as many folks on that steering committee as possible. So the three stakeholder groups are our partners, our kind of internal city departments, the council, our public safety partners, our contract folks like our prosecutors and public defenders, external stakeholders, those folks in the community that we work with and interact with every day, folks who come to our meetings here, our internal stakeholders, be a stakeholder group of department personnel representing commissioned and non-commissioned and folks with rank and without rank. This says nine person. I'm going to cap this at nine. Really, I should say max nine because we may have trouble getting nine folks on some of these groups. But our partner stakeholders will include all of our departments. You guys didn't know this. We'll include all of our departments.
Yes,
have
we
representatives.
Did.
Michael or a designee from the executive branch, somebody from the city council. And then we'll reach out to our city prosecutor, our public defender, the sheriff's office, and Fire District 7 because we work with all of those folks on a daily basis, and so it would be valuable to have their input. So we'll send those invites, and we'll see how that goes. Yes, sir?
School district fits in there, one of those, or is that school district different?
You know, really, you're right on. The school district would fit into this, and so I'm going to make a note of that.
Very last bullet there, one
yep.
of the...
Thank you. That's exactly what I was hoping for tonight. Input.
Say something?
Anyone.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Our external stakeholders, this is going to be the folks from the community. I've just identified a number of groups in our town that we would want to invite to participate in this, the MCCA, the Chamber of Commerce, the town center, faith groups, activist groups or individuals, the Women's Association, and any others that I missed. And this is another part where I was hoping to get some input. If I'm missing somebody or some group that's out there that you know of in your interactions with the community, be great to add those folks. We'll also put this out on social media and do a media release and invite participation from anyone out there that wants to participate. Maybe we'll have more than nine, and we'll have to make some decisions on who should or could be on that. That would be a good problem to have. Correct. And I think you have a resource list for that?
We have an HOA group that comes together quarterly, so we can certainly ask for volunteers from there.
I think that's let's plan on that at your next meeting.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mayor. Our internal stakeholders, again, representative of just the folks within the department, our sergeants, corporals, non-commissioned staff, patrol officers, folks in investigations, our volunteers, and the deputy chief by default will just be on that committee, that stakeholder group, because he'll be the conduit for information and a resource to be able to answer questions and such. Each stakeholder group is going to have some guiding principles that they'll need to consider. The City of Mill Creek Guiding Principles, the Mill Creek Police Department Guiding Principles, and in your blue folder is a plastic card that's got vision and mission on one side and the core values of the police department on the other side. That will be one of the resources to work within. The police department's oath of honor, every one of our officers commissioned fully or partially commissioned take an oath of honor when they're hired to uphold the law and never betray our integrity and some things that really define who we are. We want to make sure we're in accordance with all of that. And then the six pillars of 21st century policing, which comes from the president's report from a couple years ago. And those things should all be included either in your handout or in your folder. We want to welcome anything that anybody brings up at one of these, because that's the value of bringing folks together, is we want to hear some ideas. But there are some very specific things that I'm going to ask each of the stakeholder groups to discuss. Number one, crime response and enforcement, right? The part of the reason the police department exists is to enforce the law and respond to crime. So that'll be one of the things we want to talk about, how we do it. Employee wellness, culture, hiring, and retention. Department staffing needs and issues, as Councilmember Vaughn mentioned. Community outreach and engagement. And then quality of life issues. So when I sit down with the stakeholder groups, I'm going to say, hey, can you look at these five things as you have your discussions and you meet and deliberate and consider? Every idea is welcome, but let's at least talk about these as well, because they're kind of important to the operation of the department. We will provide for the stakeholder groups the LEMAP and CPSM study, so folks can read for themselves what has been said. We're developing an employee strategic plan survey, but the holiday weekend kind of monkeyed with making that happen. So that'll be coming, but it'll be through one of our internal programs where we'll survey all of the police department employees, some questions on the survey, and then share that with all the stakeholder groups. Again, the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing will provide copies of the budget and the capital improvement plan and City of Mill Creek demographic information and crime statistics. We use the WASPIC Crime in Washington report that I shared with you all a few weeks ago. The process, series of meetings. I like to say three meetings and a product, so that's what we're going to start with, three meetings and a product, and maybe we can do it in less. The steering committee will get the information from the stakeholder groups, and we'll distill that down. The stakeholder groups should meet for no more than three meetings, talk about the vision, interests, and goals, talk about the topics, look at the resources, and just put together their report. So an internal stakeholder report to the steering committee, this is what we think. And each stakeholder group will do that. The chairs of the stakeholder groups will present that information to the steering committee, myself and the three stakeholder chairs, and anyone else who wants to come and be part of that. And the more the merrier, really. Steering committee will get all that, and again, I'm going to set that, three meetings and a product. And we're going to come up with something. We're going to come up with what we believe to be a good strategic plan that talks about all the issues that have been raised and put together a draft, and then give that back to all the stakeholders, everybody who is involved in the process, to make sure it accurately reflects what they're thinking, and then we'll make whatever adjustments we need to make as part of that. And then once that's done, bring the whole thing back and do this again. We'll talk about it and explain what it all is and what it says. There shouldn't be any surprises when we get to that point, because we'll have had these discussions for a series of months along the way, and there will be interactions and meetings, so there shouldn't be any surprises other than what the final product looks like and what color paper we put it on. So, and then our project goals and outcomes, we want to have this complete by the end of the second quarter of 2020. I expect to have it done early in the second quarter of 2020, but we'll see how that goes. That'll allow us to consider anything in there for the budget preparation process, so we can include those in our discussions and deliberations. And then we'll look at it again every year. And that may be just an electronic gathering of all the people that were involved, as we'll distribute that to everyone and say, okay, here's where we are a year later. What do you think? How are we doing? Here's what we've accomplished, what we said we're going to do. Here's what we haven't accomplished. And then we'll do that every year and keep that thing fresh. And this will set the stage for us to be better today than we were yesterday, or as an old Navy chief told me once, suck less today. I think be better today is better, but he's a Navy guy. So, questions on that?
Just a comment. So, great idea and great process, I think. So the trick on these kinds of things is when you send it out to, you send the fingers out in the community and say, what are all the things you'd like to see? Sometimes people get attached to ideas at these out in the appendages that don't fit within your overall mission. I think your overall mission is probably fairly clear, but I think your role as chair of that steering committee and your idea of having the steering committee having those three partner groups to kind of keep some, you want some creativity and some...
Sure.
Good thought, but having some bounds on it so people don't get crazy and get frustrated that, oh, I thought this was a really good idea, and I'm frustrated it didn't happen. That's, I think you got good.
Thank you. And it is really the steering committee's job to distill all of that that could be very, very far out on the periphery with little chance of success. And it's our job to distill all that down and come up with something usable and useful. And it, like any editing, there will certainly be items that end up on the cutting room floor. And then that's my responsibility to work with and communicate with the folks who maybe had the idea and say, here's why that ended up on the cutting room floor. And that's as important in the process as any other aspect of it is, because folks, we are asking for people to volunteer their ideas and thoughts and be heard. And we don't want to run afoul of somebody who said, had a great idea, and you put it on the chopping block and didn't even talk to me about it. So that's an equally important piece of that. Yeah. Thanks.
So we have budgets and projections. I mean, if we had my way, I want a horse. It's likely going to end up on the cutting.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I like that idea, too. So,
at any rate, where is the, like, our revenue projections, our cost? You know, we have, what, five-year projections. And so we can't do everything, and where does our, like, five-year budget fit with your five-year strategic plan?
Well, that's really yet to be determined at this point, because I can't say with any certainty what's going to rise to the top. It could be a lot of programs that, heck yeah, that's a great idea, and we can do that. There may be things, and there likely will. And certainly some really good ideas are going to cost some money. And they may be worthwhile rising to the top of that strategic plan, and for me to come back here and say, okay, well, here's the folks have spoken, and this seems to be important, and I've worked with my friend in the finance department, and we figured out a way, and then come back and say, we figured out a way. Is it something that's doable? I can't really give you there's a lot of visioning that goes into this. And so, yeah, you may hear from me again saying, can we spend some money on this, that, or the other thing? But we won't know that until we start to really boil this down. And that's why we want to get it done in the spring, so we can incorporate anything that needs to be incorporated into the budget process or put on the shelf for the following biennium budget.
Chief, first of all, I want to commend you for taking the initiative to try and step outside of the comfort box of your current structure and say, what could I do? What could we do? That's something we can all learn from. Strategic planning is a challenge, as we all know, because it always comes down to the actions. People are concerned about what kind of actions are going to come out of this process. And I think that really what is part of strategic planning isn't the actions, it's providing, and I think, and I hope I'm not misleading on your presentation. First time I'm kind of reading into it, but my concern was I saw a lot of stakeholder meeting committees coming back to the steering committee with ideas, and I do think that it's very important for that steering committee to provide some type of guidance to the stakeholders before they come up with anything.
Sure.
And it should be, you know, some guidance of fiscal responsibility, some guidance about, but you know, if something is great and it costs a lot of money, that doesn't mean we can't talk about it.
Right.
There's something there, and talking about it might lead to an outcome of how we could obtain it or a part of it or something like it or whatever it might be. But I do think that the steering committee needs to establish some guidelines to the stakeholder committees before they move with any ideas. Some guidance of how should they think, how should they, what is the ultimate mission and vision of why are we doing this? Strategic planning, the hardest part is, what does it look like when I get there, when a truly strategic plan doesn't have a specific outcome?
Right.
It has an objective, it has, you know, a purpose more than it does, you need to travel down the road and wind up at this location. That might be a tactic, but that's not the strategic plan. So I commend you for doing this. This is a stretch, and I think everyone should stretch themselves, and I admire you for doing it. I do think that the only recommendation I would make on that is
a lot of people are going to get concerned about, well, people are going to ask for, you know, turbo patrol cars, or they're going to ask for, you know, bikes like they had on Judge Dredd and things like that. You know, that's kind of a concern. People make jokes about it. But I do think that there might be a different way to police. There might be a different way to impact the community. Might be a different way to interact. Might be a different way to send a message about our community. And I wholeheartedly support this. I think you're doing something really smart, and it's a lot of extra work, and nobody's going to get paid more for it. But I think you will see rewards from it. But I do suggest that there be some guidance from the steering committee before they get anything back from the stakeholders, so they understand kind of what exactly should they provide.
I appreciate that. This presentation is just kind of the intro, and this will do with the stakeholder groups as well, and have these kinds of conversations, and really kind of set up the playing field. You know, I listed five topics that really are important that we need to look at. Good healthy stuff for an organization. That should help focus some of that energy. I don't want to discourage any good ideas, but it is going to be a matter of what's the playing field, and what's our goal. And then it's my responsibility with the stakeholder chairs, is to just make that into something realistic.
Your hardest challenge would be defining the goal.
Yeah.
That's the hardest challenge. What are we trying to come up with here?
Well, our goal is be awesome. I mean, that's our goal, is that we want to be an awesome police department that does awesome things.
Define awesome.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's different for every single stakeholder and what that looks like. But that's what we want to know, is what does that mean to you, and what does that mean to somebody else that's out there? What does an awesome police department look like? And that's what we want to hear.
Again, commend you. I'm glad you're,
thank you,
glad you're leading this with the police.
Thank you. Well, it's – and – again, I've shared with my peers. I hope that this sets the stage for future strategic planning citywide, that we can show that we put together a relatively good process, and we made adjustments along the way because we realized that sounded like a good idea, but it's not working, and that we can kind of be a model moving forward.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Chief. I like this. And this does kind of go to addressing some of what I thought might – you know, we're out of the loop. The police department's been off the radar. You know why? Because you guys are killing it. You're doing a great job. There's nobody coming in complaining.
We prefer not to say we're killing it, though.
Okay. Your folks are doing a spectacular job.
Thank you.
They serve us well.
Killing it.
And they're doing a fine job. One of my goals when I first got on was to address retention and the turnover, and I feel good that we pay, you know, if a guy wants to leave and go work for the county, I'm not going to hold it against him. Sure. But I don't want to make it easy for him. I don't want him to leave here for $1,000 pay raise. I want him, you know, take a cut. One of the ways that we as a body tell our employees that we value them is how we pay them.
Sure.
And I think we're paid well, and I want to continue to pay our folks well, and so that if they are thinking about leaving because, you know, there's opportunities, it's not going to be an easy decision. And then if they choose to do, some may need find that as a path, but we're not seeing the massive turnover we saw in the mid-90s.
Right.
And I think that's awesome. A lot of changes have gone on. We're much larger, new leadership, and a good compensation package. So I'm excited to hear what this says, and then have a chance to participate. I wasn't even real sure until you just shared how many are on a squad. There's five. What's the minimum? It's three. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I mean, if you only have – if the goal – so then if we all say, yeah, we don't ever want to have less than three, well, that answers a lot of questions.
Right.
If we say we don't want to be below four, that changes it. And if we say we're fine with one, which we're not,
right.
That changes. So having that discussion on our level and answering that question then opens up, it either shuts doors or opens them. So that's kind of back to, this is going to be good. I think this will create that. I just don't know when we'll get to participate, if you're only having one of us or whatever. I don't know how we, I'm trying to envision how we get to participate as well. I wouldn't want you to do all kinds of great work, come to us and say that we brought three helicopters and one of those Dredd Judge Dredd motorcycles and go, there's no money for it.
Sure.
And we're not going to deal with that, because if we did that, we can't pay that 3% raise to the union guys, and we can't keep their medical competitive. And those are our – that's – at least that is a priority for me. Whenever I am looking at the budget and getting a little stingy, it's because I know a lot of good people here at some point are going to want a pay raise. Or maybe there's going to be a change in medical that's going to hurt us, and I don't want to hurt the employee who's already struggling and have that $20 copay, which hurts a little, go to a $40. So I'm not – when it sounds like I'm maybe poo-pooing a good idea, it's because that is always in the back of my mind. So, but this is great. I support this. Thank you for bringing it to us, and I'm excited to see what it brings us.
You know, a couple months ago, you asked me about, you know, getting back together to talk about some quality of life issues. And at the time, I shared with Mike, I think I've got the perfect way to do that coming, and that's this, right? Because this really will serve to address that question, to say, what are we doing about these things, and what do we want to do about these things? And that's what we want to do about them is equally as important as what we're doing about them now. And so this fits right into what your question was a few months ago. In fact, I think also included in your packet was a little window flyer for parking.
Yep.
It was paper clipped to that plastic card. Again, kind of in response to your question, when you know we talked a little bit about what are you going to do about it, and this is one of the things that we're doing about it, and it's actually worked out pretty well. We've had people come to the front window and say, thanks, I got this on my car, I had no idea. So, you know, little things like that go a long way, and so that's just an element of what this is going to be. What does it look like to that person? What does an awesome police department look like? And we want to hear. So.
Question. Process for city council involvement.
Sure. So, thank you. One member of city council who you would select would be part of the steering committee. So myself and one council member would be part of the steering committee. And then in the appropriate stakeholder group, one or more council members who have an interest could be on that stakeholder group. Now, if we have two council members and we get nine people and we have to make some cuts, we may need to look at, do we cut a council member in favor of a department head or, you know, a fire chief or a school superintendent? But, you know, we'll cross that.
I would. Come on.
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it. So I will ask more formally than I'm doing tonight, because this is just kind of a breeze through this, but I'll ask for council member to be part of the steering committee, and then as we put the stakeholder groups together to have councils decide who wants to be part of that stakeholder group. And then there's at least two members of the council that are involved in the process.
You stayed here in your presentation that you wanted the council to pick. Do you want the council to pick the individuals for you, or do you want the individuals just to come to you and say, I'm interested, and you can pick the ones you want?
I will defer to your side of the dais on that, on how you'd like to do that. Here's my ask is at least two council members, one who wants to be part of a stakeholder group and one who wants to be on the steering committee. And then I'll let you all decide on how you want to do that.
So when do you start?
October 1st. I've got a little bit of a timeline that I'm working on. We want to get our survey out. We want to broadcast some information, get some buzz and some discussion going, and then ask for some folks. So I'm kind of tentatively looking at being able to get something going on or about October 1st. Not meeting yet, because it's going to take just a little time to find out who wants to be involved and you know, pick some people, and however that may look. But we'll start asking around October 1st who wants to be involved. So you got a few weeks to consider it and discuss it amongst yourselves. An open session or executive session is appropriate.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well done, Chief.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up is Local Government Investment Pool authorized signers.
Thank you, Mayor. This gives me the opportunity to introduce the council and our community, our interim finance director, Tara Dunford. As part of Tara's work, the one thing we've discovered is that we actually have never received authorization from council for who sits on the local government investment pool. I also want to note and apologize to you that the legislation is in your packets. It was not part of the original binding that we put together for last week. And what it essentially does is identifies myself and Ms. Dunford as being those folks that are two people that are authorized to make deposits or draws from the local government investment pool. Tara, if you could give us more background, please.
Welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here. This really is a housekeeping item, so we've neglected to do the resolution for whatever reason. This is not a change in our procedure at all. It's always been the finance director and the senior accountant that move money back and forth. This is adding the city manager to the resolution and giving that person authority to add signers. And when that will really help you is if you don't have a finance director for some reason, you have a backup that can add and remove people. Exactly. That's what prompted us to get this taken care of. So it is housekeeping. Like I said, we use this fund on a regular basis to invest our surplus cash. It's 100% liquid. If we need the money tomorrow, we can get it. Interest rates are about 2.5% right now, which is really good. It's actually better than what we could get in longer-term investments. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, so I remember we talked about the LGIP and this whole process when we did a lot of our financial procedures and policies. So it's in the internal documentation, but you're saying there's a requirement for us to have a resolution that we need to adopt tonight, or at least talk about adopting tonight.
Correct. That's a state treasurer's office requirement for us to participate in the pool.
Okay. Well, just and you said we just got this. So I'm looking through it, and it's in the whereases, so maybe it doesn't matter. But one, two, three, fourth whereas. Any contributions or withdrawals to or from the LGIP made on behalf of the governmental entity should be first duly authorized by the City Council, the governing body, or any designee of the governing body pursuant to this resolution or a subsequent resolution. So that says that, of course, we could do that. We've never been involved that level of cash management, but because we're designating under this resolution or subsequent resolution that we're designating you and the senior accountant, that's
correct.
We're out of this day-to-day.
Correct.
Okay. And it says we'll cause a certified next rep whereas certified copy of said resolution. That would be a change to who is our duly authorized.
This just means that we have to send the final copy back to the state treasurer's office tomorrow if it's approved today.
Of the who signs it or to me, I was reading that. I'm not sure if I'm reading it right. Of every time we want to move some money.
No, I believe the intent is to say that we need to file this certified resolution with the state treasurer's office, not every time we transfer money.
Of the resolution. Okay,
yep.
Thanks. I was reading it wrong. Thanks.
I don't have a question, but I do have a quick comment. I do like that you're addressing this because we actually just ran into this when it came to the disbursement of surface water funds. So, fact that you're fixing it as quickly as possible is pretty darn impressive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Comments or questions? So this will be resolution 20-581. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second for resolution 2019-581. Do we have to read
it?
I'm Mike.
This came to us pretty quick, so we're just looking at it right now. I want to ask the city attorney explicitly, is this okay, ready to go, have you had a chance to look at it, or is there going to be, are we giving you enough chance to look at this in terms of approving what we're signing? I'm looking to you to be our check, since we only got it just at 6 o'clock, and I've only just looked at it in between other things.
Right. I assume that this resolution came from the auditor's office.
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago, reviewed and approved.
I've got a lot of time, and I can tell you that it does what it's supposed to do.
Okay. I'm just struggling because I know it was over the holiday weekend. It wasn't an electronic packet. It's just here. The process is not good, but if we're happy with the result, I'm okay with it. I'm looking to the attorney and the city manager to say, if you tell me to sign this, I'll sign this, but I have not given it the due diligence I would have preferred given the fact that we got it at 6 o'clock.
Yes, and the oversight is mine. It was supposed to be included in the packet last week. As Mr. Marsala stated, he has had a chance to review it. I've discussed it at length with Ms. Dunford, and we're confident that this would be the way to go forward. To the extent we've never had authorization, we would like it, and we respectfully urge its passage. Thank you.
So we have a motion and a second for resolution number 2019-581. Any further comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Okay, now we're up to item F. This is just a discussion only of House Bill 1406, an act relating to encouraging investments in affordable housing and supportive housing. And Councilmember Todd brought it up a couple times already. So, City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. And the reason why I've added it today is not because we have it thoroughly figured out, because many of us find it confusing, but to develop a conversation about the direction that the City Council would like us to head going forward. In the 2019 legislative session, the state approved a local revenue sharing program for governments, local governments, by providing up to a 0.0146% local sales and use tax credited against a state sales tax for housing investments. The bill creates a sales tax revenue sharing program, allowing cities to access a portion of the state sales tax revenue to make local investments in affordable housing. Here's what we understand that HB 1406 does. County and city legislative authorities are authorized to implement a local sales tax, which in turn proportionally reduces the state sales tax to fund affordable or supportive housing. What that means is that there is no increase in sales taxes to the consumer. We are permitted to work together between the county and the city to authorize and implement a local sales tax. Housing services may only be provided to persons whose income is at or below a certain percentage, and the county or city may enter into an interlocal agreement with one or more other counties or cities or housing authorities to provide affordable or supportive housing. The reason why I bring this to you this evening is in reading a little bit about what happened in the city of Tacoma. It seems that there is some issue relating to a county potentially preempting municipalities where the municipalities have not yet acted or made a decision whether to participate in implementing their own tax levy, or they just want to opt out by default through inaction. And I just wanted us to be able to develop a conversation. This is less a presentation this evening and more of a dialogue between administrative teams and the legislative body. The other attribute of this HB 1406 is that a county or city may use funds on a cash basis or bond against the revenue. And then there's limitations regarding how the revenue collected or the bonds issued, how they might be used. The important deadlines for us, although it sounds a long way away, would be a resolution to levy a tax credit. We have to have acted upon that before January 31st, 2020, and then an ordinance to levy the tax credit by July 27, 2020. In doing that, before the county were to act, would be to preclude the county from that portion of our revenue. I understand from a table that I worked with Tara on that the city would stand to gain around $24,610 if we were to act ahead of the county. I'm not here necessarily to address intergovernmental relations and how this would work with our representatives of Snohomish County. I've not had that conversation with anyone in Snohomish County, but I do want us to be aware of the opportunity for the city of Mill Creek to act, and by doing so, it would give us, enable us to have the opportunity to pool our revenue with any other entities that also chose to act preemptively ahead of Snohomish County. Do I know of any other entities that have acted yet? I'm not aware of any. The only one that I'm aware of is what happened with the city of Tacoma and their county. So I want to at least present it as an introductory topic this evening, at least take the temperature of City Council on where we're at collectively and how you would like us as an administration to proceed or not to proceed.
Me personally, I found this incredibly confusing.
Yes.
I don't see how the money's collected. I don't see how the city gets it back. I mean, I, I've read this twice, and I'm still confused, honestly, and I don't openly admit that to sound like I don't get it. I really don't get it.
Through the chair, Councilman Cavallari, what I would say is that I do not proclaim to have digested it, but what we were sitting with is awareness of, do we present this to council once we've taken the time and thereby risk preemption by the county if they choose to act, or do we at least get this on the table and share in the confusion, maybe have some insights in terms of our joint awareness. There's a number of materials we attach from AWC. I think we've all read the same materials. But at the end of the day is a choice point as it relates to how quickly we want to act, and or do we want to work with the county rather than being able to have our own opportunity to go out there and reach other agreements with other entities. Again, I'm not sure that clarifies it. We would be prepared to come back and discuss this again next week, but I really think it's important for us to have an introductory conversation about it this evening.
Our options are really limited from my perspective under this bill. It's really aimed towards larger jurisdictions because we're looking at $24,000. You know, the legislation is really aimed at a larger city like Tacoma or Seattle, where you can take this small portion and bond against it and use that money to actually build affordable housing. With $24,000, we're not going to be building anything. At most, we might decide we want to use that money to provide low-income rental assistance or housing assistance of some sort, but I think we're better off if we get involved in participating with other jurisdictions to pool our money, because I don't know what we're going to be able to do with $24,000 that's going to have any meaningful impact on the affordability issue.
Councilmember Todd and Strickland?
Yeah. Does somebody in staff have more to present, or do you want me to? I want to jump in and say what I, because I've been following this all along. I think I understand more than some do, and I'd be happy to take a shot at it, but if Tara or Tom knows more.
Yes, we've actually, that was the presentation, and we're prepared to do our best with the questions.
Well, let me give a rip at it then. So we as cities and the counties went to the state legislature this session and said, one of our big issues is housing affordability. Help us out somehow. So this is kind of remarkable that the legislature says, we will give you, cities and counties, a piece of our 6.5% sales tax they collect. This is really unusual. They said, we will share a small piece, but some piece of that. And so the citizens will not see that the state collects anything different than the 6.5, on top of which transit and local taxes get added. So you still pay 10.5 in Mill Creek and 10 point something else other places. But when it comes time to distribute money, the county, if you've got the right legislation in place, and we'll talk about it in a minute, the state will send us a check in some form for about $24,000 a year out of the sales tax collection that comes through the whole system. We'll get $24,000 more, and the state will get $24,000 less for the case. $24,000, as Councilmember Holtzclaw points out, is not a lot for us to do something with, but every city has an opportunity to do this. And there are housing affordability folks out there who would just love this, and they're waiting, they're chomping at their bits to come to cities like us and say, we would love to have you take that and put it into the Snohomish County Housing Consortium, like this group that Tom represents us on. And they'd be happy to have come to here and say, hey, give us your money. We will have a program under which people can have rental vouchers or something like that. So folks who are at that 60% AMI or less level would have an opportunity to receive probably rental assistance in our city towards that. Because you're right, there's not enough to bond towards it. Where it gets confusing is, and I think the intent that we're talking about through the whole legislative session, where I think the law was supposed to go, was counties can get 0.0073, cities can get 0.0073, the state was willing to cough up 0.0146, I think I'm missing one zero in there, but together, that's all the legislature was willing to give up, but we'll give the county some, we'll give the city some. Then they put an extra kicker in that said, if you as a city will add an extra tax onto your citizens for housing of some sort, then you get to double that. And so instead of it limiting to the 7.3 number, we would get 1.46 ourselves. I don't think there was supposed to be a deal where it was a race to the finish line that the counties could usurp our money, but that may be indeed what you're referring to in Tacoma. There could be a drafting error where the intent may not be happening, and maybe that's what's going on in Tacoma. I don't know about that one. I don't know if that helps. But so this is free money. If we're willing to put up with the administrative hassle, and the way we as a city with only $24,000 would deal with that administrative hassle is dealing with the Housing Alliance of Snohomish County or something, and say, here, take our money with Mukilteos and Monroes and Stanwoods and whatever and do something good with it, administer a program that's more efficient than we would do it. If I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, I'm with Councilmember Cavallari. I'm still trying to understand a lot of this, but Councilmember Todd, that helps a lot. Sorry for my own ignorance. We don't actually get involved in the development. We just approve the development process, and we get the tax credit. Is that correct?
Sales tax. Every time sales you tax. Buy a stick of gum, or anything, not stick.
Yeah, but we qualify for the sales tax refund if we approve a development that meets this requirement of affordable housing. Is that correct? No. We have to develop the...
We don't have to develop anything. We can sign an ILA with somebody else.
Right. Okay, so we don't have to develop. We can
work with a developer. Qualify, so we're going to develop a program, and if I'm only at 50% of AMI, Mike Todd as an individual could go and apply potentially for rental assistance. I don't have to be living in a certain project.
But the purpose of this is for us to encourage us as cities and counties to build affordable housing projects like a rental project targeting people who are at 60% of the median, right?
It doesn't have to be building affordable housing as a project. It has to make housing more affordable. That could be a rental assistance program so that somebody could afford to live in that apartment building over there because they're below that income level. They need a little help to be in that existing building. It's not a...
So it would be up to us to provide the rental assistance program and then we get the tax credit? Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's pretty good wording.
We're covering somebody's costs to get...
State is covering it.
State is covering
State is providing the money. We need to administer it.
Okay, so it's not our money. We're not providing the assistance.
We don't have to. I think Seattle might do that. And some cities are going to go say, hey, let's pass an extra tax, another tenth of a cent.
So it's for us just approving that the affordable housing could be available. And somebody else would pay for it, and then we would get the tax credit. Is that correct?
You're trying to link an actual positive outcome to this.
I am, because I want to know if I want to
hold just a kickback of money something that feels
it sounds,
warmer.
Yeah, I just want to make sure. Are we putting up the money to get some money back? Because I don't need to do that. But if somebody else is putting up the funding, and then we're getting a compensation for that.
Putting up the funding for what?
For affordable housing project. If we made a project available at the 60% requirements that I read in this thing, then...
Enough revenue from this tax, we could use that to build a city-sponsored project for affordable housing. Seattle's trying to do it. They just sold a huge chunk of dirt down in the Denny Triangle for $138 million that they're going to take and use to build affordable housing. The city is undertaking that project. So if they use this legislation, they could take that portion of the sales tax and put that towards their development that they're going to undertake.
I understand. Okay. Question I asked earlier while you're out was that do we have to subsidize the project or can that be somebody else who's doing it? A developer that we just allow?
The attorney might have an answer.
I am not an expert in the statute, but I can, but the goal of the statute is that the state is making a very small percentage of its state tax revenues available to go back to cities and counties so that they can have the ability to do something to assist affordable housing in their neighborhood. Some cities like Seattle and Tacoma will have enough money doing that they could actually build projects. Many other cities like Twisp will not, and they would be better served to take their little bundle of cash and join it with other little bundles of cash and let somebody like Arch or some other affordable housing outfit do the work to make the good come out of the system. I think the state's just trying to facilitate getting money into the jurisdictional hands around the state to help solve this problem.
And this 24,000, I heard, Brian, that's a max or?
No, that was the estimation based on the percentage that the statute allows that we would get back based upon the sales tax revenue that was generated.
Oh, okay.
At what year the number was based on.
Okay.
So do we even think the pain is worth the payoff? I'm just out of curiosity. Go ahead, Tom. Tom, go ahead.
Tom Rogers, planning manager. And
your address, please.
City Hall North. Suite 110. So I'm not an expert on this at all, but sitting back there, what comes to me to what the city here could probably handle is we are members of the Alliance for Housing Affordability, and they are looking for long-term funding that would be sustainable and continue through on to collect money and then find a project somewhere in the county. So if the county, if it's not a race to the finish, because if the county races to the finish and took the money and then put it in the same program, which they probably would, then there'd be no net gain for us to go into it. But if we both can take it and there's twice as much money available, well, then there might make some sense to collect the money and then forward it on to AHA is what they're called. And that would give us some influence in the area and maybe have some good come out of this. That's big cities to run housing programs and to give credits to people that need to get more affordable, subsidized, that takes a lot of administrative bureaucracy and effort, and I don't think we're really geared up for that sort of thing here. But if we had some way to pass through that and then, our comprehensive plan talks about our strategy is to participate regionally. And that's we're doing that through AHA. So that might be something that works. We could look into a little further and maybe see if that would be appropriate or considered a housing authority under the terms of the statute. Anyway, that's all I thought I'd get.
Okay. Perceived urgency is this preemption argument that may or may not exist coming out of Tacoma. I suggest we reach out to the county and find out what they're considering, if anything, so we know whether we want to participate our dollars with them. Whether or not we want to go it alone and have the ability to dictate or control or where our estimated $24,000 a year would go if we want to do this. I'm not sure if you have, Mayor, heard anything up on the 8th floor of anything being discussed by the council. Yeah, that's true.
Sorry.
So maybe through the channels of where people can talk, we should find out if anything is being proposed at the county level.
I think that would be a good idea. If it turns out that there's a race to the finish, and Mike says you have to pass another tax to get the full amount.
Doubled amount would be another tax, and I don't think we want to go there.
No, nobody does. But based on what happened in Pierce County and Tacoma, I would just want to make sure that we're not losing half of our money. I don't see us doing any programs. I do, speaking only for myself, believe that we should partner with somebody that's bigger and has a real project. I know Linwood had a good project that fell through last year, homeless students, and it fell through. So, and just because we like something today and like it for 5 years, when people change, programs change, and at least we would have control of whatever it was the council at that time wanted to do. So if there's no race to the finish to get there first, then we have until December of this year to pass our resolution.
January 30th next year. But
right. And if there is a race, then the council may want to take action sooner rather than later. So if you could find that out, that would probably give us a course of action.
I will. I'll try tomorrow morning.
Thank you, Heather.
Well, I was going to say, you're here talking about the race to the finish. So the deadline that is in the state statute is by January 30th, 2020. We have to declare an interest in doing something. And then by July of 2020, we actually have to enact this. So the January 2020 sounds like it's a long ways out there. So as we just talked about here, if there's a race going on, maybe that's why it's more important. But I think we as Mill Creek and Mukilteo and Stanwood and Breyer and all those folks make our decision, it's going to make it easier for AHA to say, here's the kind of program we can put together. If there's a bunch of you they might be willing to put together a program that would be of interest for us to take our money, which I believe we should maintain control over, and say, well, we'll let you do this for the next 5 years, but not forever necessarily. I don't think I really – maybe the county's got a good plan right now, but I'm not sure I want to turn it over to them forever, because it might turn out that they want to put it all into downtown Everett, and that's not really what we want to do necessarily.
This is a 20-year commitment. This legislation
goes for 20 years, yeah.
So we're trying to guess today, and there'll be other council people. I do not anticipate being here in 20 years. Other people are going to have, will have other needs, other whatever. So just want, like Mike, I just want to make sure that we have some control over.
So the important thing to remember, going back to Councilmember Steckler's comments earlier, eligible uses of the funds, items 1 through 3 here are projects. Running big projects. Number 4 is us. For cities less than 100,000, the funds can also be used for rental assistance to tenants. That's simple as, here's your bucks to help you with your deposit or whatever. And we do have folks in town. I hang out with a bunch of seniors. There's people got hit with a, what do I do? Where do I, all of my son, my rent's gone up 100 bucks, and they're trying to figure out ways to help those folks because they're low income. They're under 60%. So if there was this money available, here's some money now that if there was a program that administered it, I would feel better that that money was, we took advantage of the state's willingness to help those folks out by helping set up a logo program so that money stayed here instead of just going to Olympia and get spent on other stuff. Thanks.
Find out. Then we can talk about it again next week in case there is something we need to do. If you say that there's not, because reading the chart, it may be that there is no race, then and that Tacoma and Pierce County just got in a pissing match. So we'll find out. We can look at it again next week.
Okay.
Okay, we're up to item G, Vision 2050 update, city comments to the PSRC.
Thank you, Mayor. A number of months ago, we had a discussion about this. As I understand, the Vision 2050 statement is really the region's formulated response for how to deal with population growth that's going to increase sizably by 2050. To the extent the city was invited to present its position, we wanted to ensure that whatever position statement the administrative teams have drafted is reflective of City Council's intention. I believe that it was within our purview to just write up our very best on this and submit it, but we want to slow down and, again, make sure that we're not going off the rails in terms of our council's intentions. Tom?
Thank you, Michael. Hello, Mayor, members of the council. It's good to be up here today. What I'm going to do is I have three presentations that are sort of molded into one. The first one was given, it's part of the public outreach toolkit that the PSRC put together. It had a script and everything, and I'll read from the script for the first two slides. From then on, I'll try to wing it. The second part of the presentation was put together by some of the planning directors and presented to the Snohomish County Tomorrow Planning Group. And it sort of talks about Snohomish County, more sort of what Vision 2050 is for Snohomish County. And then I put together a few slides at the end, the third one, and that's sort of what I anticipated the council might be concerned about, our concerns, and what kind of comments we might make. Right now, it's been issued, the Vision 2050 plan, and we have until September the 16th to provide written comments on that plan. So here we are on slide one. Hello, I am Tom, and I'm excited to present this to you. The Puget Sound Regional Council is a federally designated metropolitan planning organization for the central Puget Sound region. The PSRC works with cities, counties, ports, transit agencies, tribes, and others to guide long-range planning in the region. The region includes 82 cities and 4 counties, ranging from the city of Seattle, the largest, down to the size of Lake Barrington. One of the things that's not in their presentation, it's very important, this plan, in that all the federal dollars that go for transportation projects come through the PSRC, and they get allocated to the counties. And so if you want to get any dollars, your plan, your comprehensive plan, this county's comprehensive plan, they all have to be in alignment. Otherwise, you don't get the dollars. And GMA grants are the same way. It all comes through the state. So it's a very important plan. So the next slide. Okay, so second slide. Vision 2040 is the current long-range plan. That was adopted in about 10 years ago. Its goal was to maintain a strong economy and a healthy environment, preserve farms and forests, and focus growth in cities and urban centers. That's why you have the urban growth boundaries, where the things outside are supposed to be rural, and the areas within are where the density is supposed to occur. Vision 24 is the starting point. So what Vision 2050 is, at 10 years, it's an update of that plan. New information comes in, so they're trying to make some updates, fix some of the things that weren't working that well. So next slide. Okay, I can forget this. Okay, so here's the forecast for 2050. I hope you're all sitting down. Is that the region is projected to grow by 1.8 million people from basically now until 2050. So that's 30 years. So right now we're at about 4 million people in the four county area, and it's expected to be at 5.8 million within 30 years. Also, as far as job and employment, it's projected to add about 1.2 million jobs in the same period. And you can see right now 2.2 million jobs are going up to 3.4. So to update the plan, there's been a long-going work program to do this work. And right now we're in the third bar, sort of that kind of tealish. The SEPA, the environmental analysis, has been done, and they've issued their draft plan. And they will take the comments over the next couple weeks, and then they are hoping to issue a final plan early next year. The themes are similar to the themes that were in the Vision 2040 plan. Increased housing choices for affordability, choices and affordability, provide opportunities for all, sustain a strong economy, significantly reduce greenhouse gas emissions, keep the region moving. I think that's referring to transportation. Restore the health of Puget Sound, protect a network of open space, having the growth be in centers and near transit, and act collaboratively and support local efforts. So those are all those are the big picture goals that they're trying to do. In the environmental impact statement that was out, there were three alternatives that were looked at. One was stay the course. And if you recall, that was basically to have, for Snohomish County, would be to have Everett, Bothell, and Linwood take the share of the growth. And then the large cities and the unincorporated urban areas would take a lot less. The transit-focused growth is sort of in the middle, and what that does is it's very similar, but it also takes the unincorporated areas that are between, for example, Mill Creek and Linwood, and says when you have transit coming by there, just because you're incorporated doesn't mean you're not going to be as dense as the others, so we're going to put the density there. And then there's a reset urban growth. And I think that was more of a dispersal of the growth, probably to the other cities, and give a bigger share and less of a focus on near the transit. Again, this isn't my presentation, so I'm not an expert on this, so I'm doing the best I can. So they got a lot of comments on this, and the big winner was the transit-focused growth alternative, which performed the best. It had the best environmental and other performance measures. There was some concerns. There were concerns about displacement of the people that are living where the areas where the densities are going to go up. And there's some of where should the growth go issues. So what they decided to do is, of course, as every planning effort does, you have your alternatives, and then you take your comments and you come up with a hybrid. So that's what we have as the preferred alternative. So here's our draft preferred alternative. And best I've got. So what it does, it takes most of the growth and puts it in the metropolitan cities, so that'd be Everett, the core cities, which in our county would be Bothell and Linwood, and the high capacity transit communities. And I'll show you a map of what those are, but we are one of those. It includes also the unincorporated area between Linwood and Mill Creek. They are now considered in that as well. 65% of the population growth and 75% of the employment growth are going to be in these centers and in the high-capacity transit areas. There will be lower growth allocations in the unincorporated areas. In the urban unincorporated is sort of like the area of the cities that aren't within the corridor, they will further out. and also less in the rural areas. And there's going to be a better jobs housing balance by shifting some of the employment allocation from King County to the other counties. When they look at that, it actually came up pretty much similar as far as the environmental impacts, although by doing some of the transfer out, it did have some more environmental impacts. Moving on. So I've got a number of slides that sort of talk about what they're doing for all. It has a few bullet points. So provide opportunities for all, commit to equitable outcomes, create and retain living wage jobs throughout the region, address risk of displacement, housing, greater housing supply and more affordable housing types and choices, growth in cities and centers. Again, 65% of population, 75% of jobs should occur in the regional centers and near the high-capacity transit. Preserve the open space and farms. Continue the growth in the cities and urban areas. So what's in the plan does not expand the urban growth boundaries. So the boundaries that were drawn prior to 2040 that are in our comprehensive plans and the county's comprehensive plan are assumed to stay the same. And it also supports implementation of regional open space and conservation plan. Keep the region moving. Comprehensive regional transportation system that supports all modes of travel, connecting centers with high capacity transit network, explore new technology and plan for 2050. And I think the new technology might involve sort of the self-driving vehicles and stuff, but I'm not positive. Protecting the environment, that's always a big consideration. Restoring the Puget Sound water quality and a four-part greenhouse strategy to eliminate climate change. Collaborate and support local actions. This is really important. That's where you, the local governments have a say. Coordination across jurisdictions, agencies, tribes, businesses, and other stakeholders, and support countywide and local planning work. And we get that a little bit later in what our comments should be. So this sort of tells you where we are. We kind of covered that. Right now we're in the 60-day public comment period. This is the first opportunity to talk to you about this since the plan was released. So that's going on right now. These have all expired. These have already all taken place. So there are no more open houses except online. There's some information online if you want to look further. And there's a thank you from Laura Benjamin. Okay, so the next part of the presentation is what was talked about at the planning group with Snohomish County tomorrow. And if you recall back at Snohomish County tomorrow, the steering committee sent a letter, I think about a month before, back in July, I believe. And this is when Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw came back and talked a little bit about that, sort of brought this onto our radar again. And one of the things in those letters that we had asked for some certain changes to the plan, the focus, the transit focus growth, were some changes. And so there are some things to up the amount of growth share in the rule from 2% to 6%. Right now it's at 8%, so it seemed like 2% was too small, so they want a little bit more. We wanted to allow some of the area, not only next to the I-5 corridor, but to allow some of that to go to the other cities, like next to Lake Stevens, for example, or Arlington. Consider more employment growth in Snohomish County. And so these are the things that we had asked for. And what they did is they actually were very responsive. They did give pretty much what the county, or through Snohomish County tomorrow, had asked for. And also, one of the things we'd asked for was to have some specific language about the growth target setting through a local process. Again, 1.8 million people population gain. For Snohomish County, that results to 424,000 more people in Snohomish County and 225,000 more jobs. Metropolitan city, which is Everett, has a real big a lift. They've got to take 87,000 people more from their existing, what exists today, and 89,000 jobs. And as far as our classification, again, we are a high-capacity transit community. You can see the other cities listed there, and there are arrows to all those. And let's see if I can get this to work. These areas, whatever color this is up here, I think it's kind of a brown, taupey color. These areas are the areas that are part of us. And there are 210,000 people gained that are going to go into that area. But it doesn't say exactly where. It's just to be in there along there to handle the future growth. It goes a little further here, more stuff that doesn't really apply to Mill Creek. So again, the real concern then is we're going to be part of the cities, the county, and the local jurisdiction talking about how to divvy up that 210,000 people and the 68,000 additional jobs. So that's a really big 30,000 foot level kind of look at the plan. It's coming. It's going to have a big impact on the city. But what does that mean for the city of Mill Creek? And so I took a stab at sort of as a staff person here and what I've heard over the years from the council and from the population is probably the main thing is that the projections exceed our capacity to handle that property using our current land use plans. We haven't done an analysis yet where all the cities have gotten together and figured it out. Right now what's going to also be going on is what's coming up is called buildable lands analysis, where they take a look at whatever the vacant land is, what the zoning is, and they try to figure out what the holding capacity is. We do that on a regular basis. So that hasn't been done. So we don't really know how big the problem is, but I think we all realize that there's not enough capacity to hold all these people in the jobs. So we're going to have to divvy that up. And then once we do that, it's going to have to come back, and our comprehensive plan updates are due in 2023. So that's roughly, 4 years from now? We're going to be coming to the council, and that may involve zone changes and comprehensive plan changes. And there's a lot of factors. Each city is going to be different. It has different conditions on the ground. We have, we're mostly built out. A lot of cities aren't. So if we rezone something that's a stable land use, it doesn't mean it's going to change. And our housing stock is in really good shape. So it's not like it's all ripe for redevelopment. You're not waiting for the wrecking ball to come. There's going to be a lot more increased targets and densities between Mill Creek and Linwood. That area before in the Vision 2040 plan, the targets were set, in my mind, kind of artificially low because they didn't take the zoning down. So the growth has been going on there, but nobody really targeted it. So I think that's going to be a big change. Another big concern is that for all this to work, if we think it can work, is that we're going to need transportation improvements to happen concurrently with or sort of to complement all this new people and new density. We're talking right now as far as 128th and 164th, there's some high capacity for the light rail that's going to come through, but there's not going to be parking at these. When they're talking about it, you're going to have to get there from a connecting one of the swift lines or something like that. So how are you going to get the people on these congested highways to even get to the train? So there's a lot of work that has to go on, a lot of planning. And so a real concern is that I think historically transportation funding and projects and planning have lagged behind. And it's going to be a problem. And another thing is that when you put this many more people here, I don't know how good of a job we do right now as far as events, emergency planning for catastrophic kind of events, wildfires, earthquakes, things like that. As we put more and more people in a closer area, I think that planning needs to be done more and actually given the attention it deserves. And so those are things that the list that I came up with, you may have other things you want to bring to the table. And then the last thing I was asked to do was to think about what kind of points I would make in a letter. I had hoped to bring a letter to you. I have actually drafted a letter, but it hasn't been vetted by the staff yet. But I think in this letter what we would do, and it was in your packet, was that we'd appreciate the hard work and the challenge that the Puget Sound Regional Council has preparing such a plan, and appreciate also the collaborative process that they have. I mean, this has been very different than 10 years ago, where basically they came down and just sort of shook their fists at us. There's been a lot of back and forth in the work that's been going on. I think that my guess is that we're in general agreement that the transit-focused approach is the way to go of the three. Makes sense to put most of your growth next to where you're investing the billions of dollars for the transit corridors and the transit that's going on. The concerns we have is that I think are that the we don't have the capacity right now. So how are we going to? What is the deficit? I mean, that sort of thing. So we've got to figure that out, and that we need to have the flexibility as local jurisdictions to sort of figure out and work amongst ourselves to figure that out. And then if we can't accommodate that, then we have to sort of have a discussion down the road about how what we're going to do. And so there's language in the plan now that sort of addresses that, and it's also being asked for. SET is going to be sort of crafting some language in that very same vein. Another thing is we need to talk about the importance of having the transportation and other public infrastructure funded in a long-term commitment. So how are we going to do that? Sort of ask the question and state that it's important to us that that sort of commitment is made. And then lastly, to talk about the importance of emergency management plans and to give them the attention they deserve. So that is what I had planned on talking to you about tonight. It's a lot. One of the things that I didn't go into a whole lot. I mean, I did tell you the PSRC is a federally mandated metropolitan organization. I mean, I did talk about that. But sort of how this fits in with our comprehensive plan and the county's comprehensive plan, that's a subject in itself. And I'll make one last pitch is there's some, on 17th of this month, there's some opportunity to go take a short course on planning at the Mukilteo City Hall, which sort of gets into some of the big picture and the RCWs and how that all works. But without the benefit of that, I'm trying to give it to you as enough to kind of let you understand at the high level. And I think the real lion's share of the work isn't writing this letter. I think it's going to be when the buildable lands report is done and the cities all sit around and we start realizing how big the problem is, how can we solve it, and then the cities start negotiating, well, you know, well, I can rezone something, but it doesn't mean it's going to change because you want your plan to be realistic. I mean, I could rezone everything. I couldn't, the council would have to do this, but you could rezone everything like 100 units an acre all the way down 527, but if that's never going to happen, that's not a realistic picture. You have to sort of think about the market forces and what's the property values and what would it take for that to happen. And we're kind of doing a little bit of that with the Mill Creek Boulevard plan. We're trying to get at what the economics are and you know, what's realistic or not. But anyway, first step's writing a letter, kind of getting on board that we're a player. Over the next 4 years, it's going to, you know, keep you updated about what's going on and, you know, find out how big the problem is. We'll come back and tell you about that. I'm sure it'll be hearing from a lot of places, too. So,
through the chair, I would say that rather than us having the letter and getting bogged down in wordsmithing, what we did was in the bullet points there present what we believe will be the salient points of the letter and that we'll have this draft available for council for next week. But as the letter will address these points, are there any others that we should consider? Is it too strong in one direction? Tom, if you could take us through, with the mayor's or the council's permission, the salient points, and then we can at least chime in on them.
Okay. So the existing land use plans do not have the capacity to accommodate the population employment targets in the communities. The extent of deficit is unknown at this time. And then I would combine that in with the third point that says local jurisdictions have to have the flexibility in establishing and modifying growth targets through the preparation of the countywide planning policies. And those targets are established as part of the countywide planning policies. So those two would actually probably kind of be in one, in the draft letter that I've kind of put together. The next one is that poorly planned high-density residential without corresponding transportation and other infrastructure threatens the quality of life for the city's residents and business community. Growth must be coordinated with the infrastructure necessary to accommodate the growth. And then the last one would be that Vision 2050 should include strong language to encourage the alignment of emergency management plans and services with the development patterns envisioned in the plan. And there is some light discussion about that. I think it talks about supporting a plan, but it doesn't really talk about ensuring, you know, I think it'd be stronger. But that's just my opinion.
Start with the good. This is too nice, is my starting point. And let me explain why. There are some good things, and I've finished reading through all 130 pages of Vision 2050. There are some good things. finally trying to correct what we've had wrong for the last 20 years, where we tried to shove all the jobs into Bellevue and Seattle. We can't keep up with the housing. So what do? They drive north and south till they can afford to buy. One of the objectives of Vision 2050 is to get job growth out of King County and into Kitsap, Pierce, and Snohomish, which is good. I also don't object to the transit-oriented focus. I don't think it's much different than what was in Vision 2020 and 2040, which was really putting the growth in the metropolitan cities or the core cities, and now what they're calling the high-capacity transit cities. This updated plan is just more reflecting the transportation investments that the region has made over the last few years. But I think I've mentioned before, one of the big faults of Vision 2020 and 2040 is its planning. And what has actually happened has been the opposite of what was planned for. We haven't had the growth occur where we planned for it to occur. And so one of the comments SCT made lightly, not strongly enough in my opinion, was that needs to be corrected. And one of the statements in Vision 2050 that stood out to me is they basically acknowledge that this plan goes against what we've seen happen for the last 20 years, but we're going to do it anyway. And it doesn't tell you anything how we're going to get a different result from the same type of planning. So in terms of going through some of your bullet points, closed out on me. On the second bullet point under what we support, I think we would support as a city the transit-oriented focus, but what I think was dearly lacking from Vision 2050 is how we are going to get a different result from essentially the same type of planning we've had since GMA was implemented. It's a laudable goal, but it's purely planning, and there's nothing different in the plan that's going to result in a different outcome that I can see. I think the biggest point of concern that we need to beef up in there, to your first bullet point, Tom, is that there's not capacity in the unincorporated urban growth areas right now to handle what is being allocated to the high-capacity transit communities like Mill Creek. Understand the impact to us is if there's not enough capacity, it puts pressure on all those cities to upzone, to take underutilized, whether they be single-family neighborhoods, moving them to medium density or taking medium density areas and increasing them to high density, it puts pressure on bodies like us to make those changes. So keep in mind when the Southwest Urban Growth Boundary that we're in basically runs down around the Silver Firs area east of us, which was developed before GMA, so it's a pre-existing urban growth area, runs basically down Sunset Road, just east of Sunset Road, south of Forest View Elementary and the middle school over there, and then it jots down to the 45th corridor. That was the line that was drawn in 1995. When it was drawn in 1995, it was drawn to accommodate what was projected to be the 20-year population projection. The current plan, the Vision 2050, says that with good planning and efficient land use, those existing boundaries are going to be sufficient to accommodate our projected growth for 2050. In other words, the line that was drawn in 1995 for 20 years of growth, they're now telling us is good for 55 years of growth. That doesn't make any sense to me. And the other thing what happened when they drew that line was you had this line drawn east of us, and all of the existing cities at the time were incorporated areas. They're all, by definition, urban growth areas. But now what this plan says is we don't want as much growth happening in the unincorporated portion of the county, which wasn't by wasn't by choice. It was just the way the cities were existing at the time. So one of the other concerns I have for our city is, and I think, Tom, you alluded to the number. I don't have the percentage, but this plan would only allocate 4% of the projected growth to the unincorporated urban growth area. So that's the area south of us, Armuga to the south. It's Armuga to the west between us and Linwood. I don't have in front of me what the actual number has been, but that's where most of the growth has been accommodated in Snohomish County for the past 20 years. It is not.
I think that the urban unincorporated is this gray area. because all the areas that used to, I think that you're talking about, and I could be wrong, are down here now. They changed their category, so that it's the area next to Lake Stevens, next to Snohomish.
So they're, maybe I misunderstood.
They're, yeah, they're different areas. So they took some of the area that was going to be in the Mill Creek kind of area, and they stuck a little bit of it out, and they pushed it out into the.
So the Moog, our, I hate this term, our Mooga, is that considered part of the city, or is it considered part of the unincorporated urban growth area?
They combined them together into this high-capacity transit community. So there's no difference now in those areas between the unincorporated and the incorporated.
They've combined. So what portion is the unincorporated urban growth boundary?
That's the area that they're referring to in that 4%, 6%. It's this urban unincorporated here, and it's this, these gray areas. I don't know what color they show up. Yeah, here. Snohomish, next to Lake Stevens, between Mukilteo, is that the airport? I'm not sure.
This chart here, Tom, which is hard to read.
Yeah, no, this chart is what allocates.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to put it on a map, because I made a wrong assumption, because I consider the Mooga part of the unincorporated county. I don't consider it part of the incorporated area.
Yeah, that's a big difference this year. In the old days, they said, and they didn't want anything to go there, which is right where the transit was going.
Then that 4 to 5, then that 4 to 5% number might not be bad. But then the other main concern I have for us is the county has invested a lot of time and money on this Southwest Urban Growth Area study just to look at the possibility of expanding the urban growth area east of where it is now to the east. And if you read through the policies in Vision 2050, they basically, to me, provide a roadmap for FutureWise to challenge any effort by the county to consider a UGA expansion in 2023. If the county council doesn't have the option and strong policy language behind it to consider a UGA expansion, that's that much less area that they have to allocate population that will then be put on us to have to deal with in our comprehensive plan and plan for. And then I think one of the other things that is of concern to me is, you know, we have this large, all these Mooga areas, which they contemplate is all going to get annexed. And but they don't address what's going to be the mechanism for making that happen. We know there was a small window a decade or so ago when they had the sales tax incentive, and I don't even, I think Councilmember Bond might have been on the council. I don't think Councilmember Todd quite was yet, when there's a little, for lack of a better word, pissing match between Linwood and Mill Creek over the area between us. It's like Mill Creek, we don't want it, but we don't want you to have it. Was essentially what the argument amounted to. And so, you know, one of the key assumptions of this plan is that all these areas are going to be annexed, but there's no real discussion of what's going to make a change from the status quo, because right now, as we've discussed, what's our incentive for annexing in any of these areas? So, you know, I guess in sum, I'd like to work with you, Tom, if the council's okay with it, on helping you craft some of this language. Because I think we need to express a little more concern about how much reality there is in the plan and what it means to us. Because bottom line is, if there's not incentives in this plan to make the plan actually come to fruition different than what we've seen over the last 25 years, we're just going to have the same problems we've had. And if the county council doesn't have the option to consider a UGA expansion, then it's going to fall on us to take that additional population and figure out how, within our city boundaries, we're going to change our zoning and comp plan designations to accommodate additional growth. So that's all.
Mike.
Councilor Holtzclaw, you made some really good points, and I agree with most of them. And I think digging into that, the definition of the urban unincorporated indeed was difficult. If you go on the online plan, you can blow that drawing up, but it still doesn't have city boundaries. Kind of confusing too what that really meant. But I think the answer is, still the 210,000 is a lot of people. If you go back to the Vision 2040, people used to say, well, what's going on in Mill Creek? I'd say, well, we're mostly built out. How are you doing on your urban growth or on your comp plan targets? The answer was, we're pretty much full, but we're pretty much there. Tom doesn't look worried. We've got to have, we've taken our allocation. Well, this changes all that. And we may, as in Tom says, because our housing stock is in pretty good shape. We're not going to have to tear stuff down and put in other things. But between Mill Creek and I-5, for sure, that stuff's going to get upzoned at some point to make that 210,000 happen. And I think that will affect the quality of life. Whether we annex it or we let the county do it, somehow that 210 is going to impact the zoning on a lot of land, and that might get upzoned and redeveloped, as we've seen over the last couple of years. So I think that is of concern to quality of life to our citizens. So I agree with you that the annexation thing, you know, it's interesting, these plans are about what PSRC and their jurisdictions have within their control, but the elephant in the room is we have not figured out a way to either force cities and counties to figure out a way to have cities annex and do urban services and counties get out of that business, or counties to say, well, forget that, we're just going to go ahead and incorporate. So indeed, right now, Snohomish County spent a lot of time on their, what do they call it, light rail communities plan, because somebody has to do the planning for higher densities as light rail comes through the unincorporated area between Linwood and Everett and Mill Creek. We don't want it. Nobody wants it. You know, we don't want anybody else to take it, but we don't want it. And so the county's either going to have to incorporate a new city there or be in the urban cities, urban services businesses. And it's going to, again, it's going to impact our quality of life. So all this stuff is, one hand, you're like, oh, I just don't want to have to deal with this. But the answer is, this is the kind of stuff city councils have to deal with. This is the time for us where we have to provide some leadership. I'll put in a pitch, as Tom did, too. I'll go into the class in a couple of weeks and get in it so we can talk about countywide planning policies and multi-county planning policies and how that fits into GMA and all this stuff that Brian's been talking about, Tom's been talking about. It's important for us over the next couple of years. This is not going to be easy, and it's going to change what we see in the next couple of years as light rail comes to this area and as our kids and our kids' kids experience this. I think, Tom, you got good points. I think that I'm with Brian. Maybe we throw something in there that says maybe collectively PSRC jurisdictions need to work with the state on updates to the GMA and incentives for annexation that make these things possible. Because unless we bend the curve, you're right, what's was in the plan back in 1990 isn't really what's happening. And this is kind of a continuing more of the same. And there's something's got to bend the curve, and it hasn't happened yet. I'll mention too, I got hung up early on. I made a public comment on this too. I would say to people, don't get hung up by the label they've attached to this. It talks about high capacity transit, and to me, a lot of people in Snohomish County, transit means buses and rail. And the answer is, I'm not going to use that. Well, it really is a robust transportation system is the focus. Because it's so expensive to build transportation, we're trying to focus growth around a robust transportation system. They're not going to change that term, but I think that helped me swallow what they're talking about. And I'll go one further on this. So a lot of this that Tom's talked about, and I think our main focus is on land use, our impact that he's talked about here, the impact on our citizens. And that has to do with transportation. You kind of talked about that, too. And this is politically a hot button. I'm going to get myself in trouble, but I think I'm going to win my election anyway. There's a whole new set of stuff here on climate change. And you will find people in this room and throughout this region who would not agree with some of the statements in that section. And I don't know if we want to put our toe in the water, but the danger, from observation of being down there at those meetings, it is a King County, Seattle-centric kind of attitude. It is the people, as you get further away from being downtown Seattle, it is harder to be heard, both by our numbers, by the number of votes we've got, and just by who's talking at the table. So this has got some pretty aggressive things in there with climate change that I'm not sure are the things we would really agree with. I'm not sure we have the guts to stand up and say little old Mill Creek doesn't agree with this. We haven't even talked about it. But just here's the artifact of what's gone on. The state had some guidelines for greenhouse gas emission reductions. Like them or not, there was a rule. Well, now that's in court. If there was a state law, I would agree that this plan needs to line up with state law. In the absence of state law, which is now being challenged, the Clean Air Agency, Puget Sound Clean Air Agency, which we're part of but we're not directly represented on, has said, here's some even more aggressive goals for greenhouse gas reductions, and those should be what we're going to do. And this plan comes really close to saying we're going to adopt those as the standard because it's the same area. That is a pretty aggressive thing to do that I'm not sure if you took a vote of our citizens and all the citizens of all the cities that are part of this region, they would all agree on this. I'm not saying we should not do something about greenhouse gases, but these are some very aggressive goals. I don't know if our city wants to stick our toe in the water or if we're going to leave it up to brave individuals to speak up against it. You can be sure there'll be lots of comments from the folks who want to have everything electric, everybody walk everywhere, everybody, you know, recycle everything. There's going to be a lot of comments that way that will probably not be balanced by people like ourselves who are bashful to say, yeah, there's this great idea, but it's not very practical. And so I'm not proposing we go there because maybe it's dangerous, but I'm wishing we could go there. Staff's given that any thought.
Well, would a comment that in reviewing their action plans for climate change that they may, you're concerned about how realistic and practical they are to actually apply, and that you look forward to finding out more about that or something? I mean, you could sort of at least raise the question without saying I'm not an environmentalist, or taking on that rather organized efficacy.
What you just said is good. So we're concerned about the practicality of achieving these is something that I think should be voiced.
But yeah, I think that's good. Without actually calling out one or starting to go tit for tat and trying to rewrite the policies, you could have something that's a little bit more global.
Council would go along with that approach in your draft letter. That'd be great.
Since Mike went there, up the plan. I was going to try to keep it on the bigger picture land use issues. But it goes beyond the climate change. I was surprised when I really encourage you, if you're not going to read 130 pages, read the introduction. It's about 24 pages, and about three quarters of that is pictures, some of which are on the slides. But it's more than climate change. This plan didn't start off by saying we've got 1.8 million people coming. How are we going to provide the housing for that? It was, we need to solve the past social justice inequities that have developed. And that's why I can't get the dang plan to pull up in the draft, but I wish I had the exact.
Yeah, hard copy if you want to look at it. I
think it's something that would really is worthwhile in the next week if you could just spend a couple minutes, because that's fine. I left my copy sitting in my office floor.
Heavy-duty downtown Seattle-ish.
It is heavy-duty downtown Seattle. It doesn't start with how are we going to accommodate these people. It's like, how are we going to protect the fish, the whales? How are we going to solve the social and inequities that have evolved over the past 25 to 50 years? A little bit back, you know what words. But I'm not sure if you take a higher picture view, I'm not sure that all of us would, the majority of us would agree with the fundamental premise from which it is coming from. And I wish I could put my fingers on it. They'll come up with it while others have comments. But I think Mike's comments should go beyond the climate change, because it really does go beyond that. It is planned to...
Yes, sets forth the vision, sets forth a pathway that strengthens economic, social, and environmental resiliency. A sustainable future. It's kind of it's an interesting focus for a plan that you really should be talking about growth. But that is a battle we cannot change the culture of this document and that organization. But I think you're right, Tom. We can put in and say, hey, we're concerned about the practicality of this, or we're concerned about that.
Take a stab at it and include more of the aspirational social equity kind of stuff. I mean, let the council take a look at it and decide.
Here, I found the language I was looking for.
What page is that?
I hit on part of it. I'll just read a couple sentences. Most importantly, Vision 2050 is a call to action to meet the needs of a growing population while considering the current needs of residents. Vision 2050 recognizes that clean air, health, life expectancy, and access to jobs and good education can vary dramatically by neighborhood. Vision 2050 works to rectify the inequities of the past, especially for communities of color and people with low incomes. So that's kind of that's the beginning of how Vision 2050 starts and the premise that they're operating from. So.
Executive summaries about 20 pages.
Yeah, there's an introduction.
Pictures.
That has it's kind of like an executive summary, but they call it an introduction.
Michael, can we get that sent to everybody? At least I assume not everybody wants 137 pages. You don't need to go.
Oh, you said the first 20. I think that would be appropriate.
Maybe just send the link and say read up through page whatever.
Send the link to the introduction, and then if you have time, one of the sections is the regional growth strategy. That would be worthwhile if you have an additional few minutes to peruse that. But there's a lot of it you can get from the headings of the goals and the policies and skip over some of the fine print. You can get the gist of it, but I think Mike's characterization of being very Seattle-centric is an accurate representation.
Yes, we can do that.
And then the two of you are going to work on a letter for us for next week?
I think Tom has got the right bullets for a letter. I think Councilmember Holzclaw gave him another couple of things to throw in there through our discussion here, which I think you've got. I think Tom's going to draft some letter. If you want somebody to help you look at it before next Tuesday, I would be happy to help you look at it. It sounds like I would too.
Mayor, if I'm hearing the suggestion that we work the draft, another iteration based on this information, and then share it with both Mayor Pro Tem Holzclaw and Councilman Todd with red and blue lining opportunities, maybe we can address the common concerns.
This is all because the deadline is we've got to do something next Tuesday, otherwise we just trust staff. And I trust staff. I think you do a great job, but let's have another bite of this apple.
Yeah, I could put something together and try to get it out in the packet that goes out with this Friday. So you have this week to put that together, and it sounds like we're pretty close. Just want to tweak it a little bit, and I've already got a draft kind of written up, so I don't think that's easily doable.
In the meantime, we'll send the link for those introductory pages. Okay.
I think the homework for everybody is to be able to read this draft and go, okay, yep, that's strong enough or not enough or whatever, and you need a little context what the plan looks like.
If any member of council wants access to the entire document, we can work to make that happen.
A lot of color ink.
Yes.
Not a lot of pictures.
Okay, any other comments or questions before we send them off?
I do.
John.
So, Tom, I've been listening to all of this because I'm not as familiar, and I did get the message on the 17th, and I will be there as well. I thought it was just a good learning program. But what's the purpose of your response, your letter? What's the purpose of the letter? What are you trying to accomplish with it? I heard a lot of specific comments about this and that, but what's the objective? To tell them you don't like the results, you don't like the certain elements of it? What is the objective?
Well, I think the objective is that it's still a draft, and there's still a chance to influence the outcome of the plan.
Outcome of
the direction. Now, are we going to have them go away from social equity and clean air goals? No. I think it's hard to turn around a boat, you know, an ocean liner. I mean, it's kind of going that way. But it's certainly going on record of what we think about it, because as we go down the step over the next 4 years, we can be on record about the problems of implementing this and going on the next 10, and this is going to happen again 10 years from now as well. So I think it's important to have the conversation, let people know what we're thinking, and I'll just be quiet about it. I'm not expecting, I think the thing about the emergency services is important.
I don't think people have really talked about it. I haven't heard anybody talk about that at all at any of the meetings. And so I don't know if it's being overlooked or it's just assuming. I mean, it's not just having a good response time and enough cops or firemen. I think it has to do with what happens when something really, you know, what is the infrastructure? How are you going to move people from out of one area into another? Or how are you going to provide supplies if the big one happens? You know, so I think that that's important also.
Well, I saw a lot of little comments in your presentation, but the two big nuggets that just hit me over the head is we have the worst potential growth ratio of jobs to people of any region, of any city. You know, we're the worst. We're like at 50% ratio, maybe a little bit over. So we have a huge problem with a lot of people coming in. Other regions, other areas, they have a better proportion of jobs to grow, so there'll be jobs for all those people. We're going to have a huge problem. We're going to have a lot more people, and we're going to have even fewer and fewer and fewer jobs for them, if I heard that correctly when I saw the ratios.
I think it's getting better. It's still not great. I think that...
Do you have that slide that shows
the slide projected? Doesn't show what it currently is. It's telling what they're proposing for the new what's coming in. So I think that the jobs to growth ratio is actually worse than that now, and that what they're proposing would bend the trend the other direction. But it's not a one-to-one, you're right.
Yeah,
most of the jobs are focused where the infrastructure for jobs are, right along the freeway in Everett, the airport, Arlington, where the airport is. That's kind of where they're focusing the jobs.
Yeah, I saw a increase in growth and an increase in jobs. And that was, you know, it was apples to apples where we are right now. And the increase in people is like 87%. The increase in jobs is 50%. That's disastrous. That would tell me that if that's true, then one of our primary focuses here is what is our plan? Oh, there it is. Yeah. Snohomish County. Ratio job pop gain is like 0.53.
Yeah, so that is from what they're projecting going forward.
Growth, the population
that,
versus...
currently the plan is worse than that. It's even a worse ratio. So they're bending the trend that direction. Is taking into account what kind of infrastructure is there to support jobs, with the whatever else went into it. I'm not an expert on that. But it is bending the trend that direction. They're putting more jobs in Snohomish County than there was under Vision 2040.
Well, I
think it should be more.
I were looking for something to word into a letter, that what is most important to us in the next 20 years, 30 years, whatever it is that we're going to need help. We're going to need support. Some program, something to help encourage job growth within Snohomish County. I know Marysville, as an example, was experiencing a similar issue with lack of jobs and growth population, and so they had a program where they supported manufacturing and substantially subsidized and reduced the taxes and cost of those businesses to encourage manufacturers to come into Marysville. Now, they did that because they had a good, strong population for those types of jobs. I'm not saying that manufacturing might be the right solution for us, but what I saw was a solution to their population growth. And I think something we're going to need is some kind of a plan to us, whatever you want to say, us more than anyone else, are going to have a bigger issue of people without jobs and without the job growth to support them. And obviously, the other one is just shooting us right in the face, which is we need more land for all these people, and we don't have it. So annexation growth, something like that's going to happen, or we're just going to stay small and tell them they can't come here. So, we need some kind of a plan if we want to grow with the opportunity that's going to be there. But to me, from your letter, I see an opportunity. Help us with the job growth. Help us with what can the state or the county do to help us encourage more job growth within our area over the next 20 years. Maybe it's subsidizing, maybe it's supporting. I don't know what it is. I don't have an answer. That seems to be a big issue, but I'm not as eloquent and deep in it as you guys are.
I don't know if it'll make a change in the plan the way they have it, but certainly there is, planning 101, they talk about you want to have equal jobs and housing because you don't want people driving back and forth. If you can live work units, that's sort of like the ultimate expression of that. But the less driving, the better. So I think that's certainly nothing wrong with saying that you wish the ratio was better. I mean, I think that's a positive step to going on record for that. And When we do our own comprehensive plan, you'd look at opportunities, if there are any, of what it would take to increase the job base in Mill Creek. But this is a very regional plan. It's not pinpointed. I mean, it's the whole corridor has that big 210 and 68,000 jobs. And so it doesn't say exactly that. That tough decision is left to us at the jurisdictions to figure out how that's all going to get sorted out. One thing, the annexation thing, I would agree with Councilmember Todd that that's a big issue as far as it's complicated to annex, and there's so many players, and the process is very difficult. I don't know how much it applies to this plan in that whether it annexes it or not. In the old days, it did, Vision 2040, because if it was unincorporated in an urban growth area, they wouldn't put the targets there, but now they are. So if you annex it, that gives you control over it. And then maybe it looks more like you'd like it to look. But I don't think anybody's waiting to put the growth in the unincorporated areas. I don't think it's not waiting for annexation. So I don't know if you wanted me to put something about annexation in the letter, but I don't think it makes a real difference on how the land use or how the allocations are going to go.
I think the way I might frame this issue is that, to me, Vision 2050 really doubles down on the prior plans. But it recognizes that it's doing so, even though it recognizes those plans have been contrary to what's happened. And that gets to the point I was making earlier, is this plan doesn't talk about what's going to need to change in order for that to happen. And I think the point of the comment is, what I would suggest we say is something to the effect that the plan is not going to reach a different result unless there are major changes made by the legislature in Olympia to help the region implement. That could be changes on annexation. It could be changes on a whole variety of issues. We don't need to get into those issues, but generally speaking, for this plan to be successful and reach a different result, something's got to change. And the thing I thought of when I read that is when I was on my cruise this summer, I went to a presentation on getting healthy and increasing your metabolism. The guy said, the first thing he said to start with your program is, if nothing changes, nothing changes. With this plan, nothing changes. So unless we make some pretty dramatic changes to state law to implement this, someone sitting up at this council 20 years from now is going to be sitting there scratching their heads going, geez, what happened? Why didn't they, what happened in 2050? We planned for all this growth to go to these areas, but it didn't happen. So we're just kind of, it's insane planning. You're planning the same way but expecting a different result.
Okay, okay, thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Next up is reports. We have a long executive session tonight, so I will withhold, not have a report tonight. Councilmember Vaughn?
No report.
Councilmember Steckler?
No report.
Councilmember Cavallari?
No report.
No report.
Just real quick, a couple of things that have gone on. So I mentioned earlier this light rail communities thing. The county has done had some open houses. They're going to be putting together a report on that. They got like 3,000 people to respond online, a bunch of people face-to-face. In talking to the county folks, I suggested when they were ready to come and offer a presentation to us of what they heard. Because I think that, again, it impacts us. This is the light rail stations at 164th, 128th. And I also I think I don't know when the superintendent is in town having a session in the next couple of days. I can't remember what it is. I can't go. But my suggestion was also if the superintendent and the school would come back and talk to us about what they heard at the open house listening session they've got going on, it'd be good. Did you go to it? Okay, I was out of town. So it would be nice if they just came back.
Anything.
I didn't miss anything. Oh, okay. Well, anyway, if there's an opportunity for the superintendent to come and use that as a reason to come and talk to us about what he heard or introduce himself to the community, it would be great. So I think I'm just encouraging mayor and the city manager to put future agendas together to think about how we can incorporate those kinds of presentations. Thanks.
Okay. You have a report or anything?
No, Mayor.
Staff, you can see the reports that are there. Audience communication going once, twice. Okay with that. We're going to recess to executive session. We have 4 points to discuss the minimum price of real estate offered for lease pursuant to RCW 4230-110-1C to discuss real estate matters pursuant to RCW 4230-110-1B, to discuss items related to litigation pursuant to RCW 4230-110-1I or L, to review the performance of a public employee pursuant to RCW 4230-110-1G, action may or may not be taken, and how long do you have?
Less than an hour.
Okay, so if we're going to go to 9:15, then we need to extend our meeting. So we need a motion to extend.
Motion to extend the meeting up to 9:30.
Second.
Second.
Pick one.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to extend the council meeting up to 9:30. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, with that, we are recessed to executive session, and we'll be moving back here.
I had my copy of the plan all tabbed and highlighted.